too many times, actually, he said. This one, at least. I used to go with Mr. Kongmi, but he preferred to deal with the bodies after they'd been discharged. That is to say, dead. He and Dr. Santo took me to the mortuaries and anatomical theaters. She raised an eyebrow in interest. Back during their medical studies? Mr. Kongmi's life confused Nika. She didn't understand how one man did so much in so few years. At points, it seemed he was a medical lecturer, a biologist, and an engineer all at once. More recently than that, when he was perfecting his lifelike automatons, just a few months ago, he was always reverse engineering the human body to build it back up again, with metal and glass. There was reverence in his voice, and Nika felt a distant connection with a man she'd never known. She understood what it felt like to break the body down into parts, to reshape it in her mind's eye. If she had met Mr. Kongmi in life, she imagined they'd have a lot of ideas to exchange. Is that how he made all his automatons so ingeniously then? Trin gave an affirmative nod. The way he explained it to me was that the human body was nature's greatest feat of engineering. And it's true. If you look at the joint of the shoulder, the elbow, or study the physics of muscle. She gave him an impressed look, lips twisted into an amused grin. You know, I always thought you were just some hired muscle who worked for the smartest man in Thumas, but you're pretty sharp yourself, aren't you? He gave her a dubious look. Is that a compliment? A question. Well, you spend enough time around Andao, and you start to pick up a little genius too, I suppose. And how exactly does one woo the heir of Thumas's largest industry? Nika asked. You know, in case I run into any other eligible billionaires. He gave her a sardonic smile. Wouldn't you like to know? He didn't buy you from the butcher's row by any chance? Not quite. A click of the door ended her line of questioning. She turned to find Dr. Santo stepping into the waiting room. Trin stood to bow, and Nika remembered to imitate him. Morning, Dr. Santo. I know we're a little early for our appointment, but I didn't know I had any appointment at this hour, Dr. Santo interrupted, regarding them with a moment's surprise. Oh, Trin said, giving her a curious look. Nika shared his confusion until she remembered that it had been Cochin who booked them. He must never have scheduled any appointment at all. Is it urgent? Dr. Santo asked. No, we're just... Trin glanced to Nika, deferring to her. We're looking to access some reference literature. I figured that, since you were the research director, you might have access to more recent publications. Dr. Santo's expression lit with curiosity. Oh, well, you figured correctly. What's the subject? The neuroanatomy of consciousness. I see, he said. I was just about to head out for lunch, but I'm sure I can find you something to help. Nika glanced at the empty desk and the phone behind it, where Cochin should have been, perhaps. Briefly, she wondered where he found the audacity to schedule her an appointment with Dr. Santo when he'd planned to be out for lunch. The annoyance was fleeting as Dr. Santo opened the door. Right this way, he said, his smile jovial, and ushered them out. They followed him down the stairs, across the gallery that connected the offices with the rest of the medical center, and into some clinic spaces. Here, the medical center was abuzz. Nurses shoved past them, carting trays of equipment to be sanitized. Others ran with soiled linens and full bedpans, screaming bloody murder at those who stumbled into their way. The clicking of cogs filled the gaps between the chatter, and in every room, at every bedside, were assortments of medical machinery with a variety of different command roles. Few were without the Kongmi insignia. Dr. Santo spoke to them above the clamor. I hope you don't mind me taking a detour to see one of my patients. And Nika, if you're looking to stay, remember I have a few open positions. Her chest warmed, and she nodded before he slipped into one of the clinical bays, cordoned off by a curtain. She could still see him through the crack, and admired the extensive machinery in just this room, an automaton to push fluids, and another that inflated cuffs to massage the patient's ankles, machines in place of a human. Nika watched as he pulled a chair up to the patient's bedside. His manner was soft as he took the patient's hands into his. It would have almost looked like heart-soothing if not for the examination gloves. Protocol, she was sure. But there was dissonance there. Touching without warmth. Comforting without feeling. This medical center. These patients. They called to her the same way her heart-soothing did. With an intense desire for connection. So many people to be healed, and so many ways to use her gift. Nika wondered if someone like her could ever belong here, with curtains drawn between patient and provider, and a machine to rule them all. If she could win the favor of a man like Dr. Santo, could she fit in without forsaking her heart-soothing in the process?
Getting along with Dr. Santo, are you?
Trin asked, pulling her attention away from the patient. Nika shrugged. He's kind, and the kind of person she might have been in a different lifetime. Someone healing others because they couldn't heal themselves. And he helped me learn names at the funeral.
We'll be sure to give him a good excuse for when you leave.
When I leave? Nika echoed. She knew it was an inevitability, but didn't appreciate how Trin treated it like one, too. He did just offer me a position.
But he doesn't know that you're...
A lie? Nika couldn't conceal the chagrin in her voice. She scowled. You really think I would hurt patients just because I could? It was always the same rhetoric. Never let a blood carver touch you, because then they'd do who knows what with your anatomy. The same Thumans would place themselves unconscious under the sharp end of a surgeon's scalpel and pay money for it.
I don't think that. I was thinking more about the danger to you, he said.
And, due to the levelness of his voice, Nika took a moment to register it as concern. I've never had any trouble managing myself before, she said, but there came comfort in his consideration. How hard could it be to fit in? His research can't be that difficult if he asks me to join without even knowing my credentials. Trin quirked a skeptical eyebrow.
You haven't heard about his research projects?
You act as if I have time to read the journal every morning. He let out a low chuckle.
I thought it was common knowledge. Dr. Santo was the first and only man to succeed with live organ transplant.
Like, she grappled with the thought of it. He put a new heart in someone?
I think he did the kidney first. But yes.
His smile was victorious, as though he'd finally found something he knew that she didn't. Live organ transplant. That was another thing that heart-soothing couldn't do. And the patient lived?
More or less, from what I understand. Since then, he's been working on a few other projects. It's a pity you can't stay in his lab. That's a rare opportunity indeed.
Yes, she said, her lips pressed thin. She thought of Dr. Santo's son, born with a hole in his heart. Had that been what drove Dr. Santo into the transplant business? Finding a new heart for his son? Trying to stave off death, if even just for a day? He must not have had the breakthrough in time to save his own child. A pity. Dr. Santo emerged again, exchanging examination gloves as he did.
Apologies for that. Generally, I leave these post-operative checkups to my aide, but it seems he stepped out for a moment.
He gestured them down the hallway. They snaked through the clinical ward, past locked medical record rooms and operating suites, and into a secluded wing of the hospital.
This is my lab, Dr. Santo introduced. As part of the grant for the Santo Research Initiative, the hospital provided a ward of the building under my sole supervision. If you can't find what you're looking for in its library, then it hasn't been discovered or invented yet.
He beamed. The confident smile suggesting his statement wasn't an exaggeration. As they stepped through the double doors, Nika felt as though she were stepping into the future. Here, rather than grimy curtains and cramped clinical bays, there were spacious rooms walled in newly painted brick and tall windows overlooking the downtown streets of the Cat Borough. And, where outdated machines cluttered the hallways of the other ward, Nika found only modern technology here. Things she never saw on the streets of Thumis or in any of her clients' houses. In one room, A metal cylinder the size of a cot sat in the corner, the window in its side revealing a dummy automaton within. In another, a row of machines with many pronged hands assisted a surgeon while she operated on a chunk of imitation flesh, passing rags and tools as she sutured up a cut in the rubber. Nika blinked in surprise when the surgeon looked up from her work, revealing dusky skin. She was Yarongi's. They passed a few more rooms, offices, operating rooms, even a mortuary, before Dr. Santo stopped before a door around the corner. He withdrew a busy key ring, fumbling a moment to source the right key, and let them in. Just as with the rest of the lab, the library was clean and contemporary, with none of the extravagance of the Kongmi's library, but all its dignity. Tidy shelves aligned themselves in rows, sections marked by alphabet, and books matched cleanly in height. Even a preliminary look at the spines revealed recent dates, some coming from this very year. Perhaps Dr. Santo was right. If this library couldn't save Hendon, nothing could.
"There you are," Dr. Santo said, sticking his hands into his coat pockets. "Just try to be mindful of the employees who come in and out. I hope you find what you're looking for, and if you have any questions, don't hesitate to ask."
His wink was an invitational one, and her pride swelled at the thought of having friends in high places, no matter how undeserved. Trin bowed again, and Nika followed suit.
"Thank you, Dr. Santo," Trin said. "Please, let us know if we can repay the favor."
"It's my pleasure,"
Dr. Santo smiled as he bowed, then turned to leave. Nika hit the shelves, tempted by habit to pocket some books, and she might have, if Trin wasn't watching her every movement. First, she took herself to the anatomy section, but a few minutes spent here revealed nothing too new about these structures in the past couple years. Then she rounded toward more recent research journals and papers. It was all organized by authors' familial names, so she and Trin took to the laborious task of skimming abstracts and perusing titles. Nika ran across a section of publications authored by Dr. Santo himself, a few papers from his organ transplant years to more recent inventions, machines that inherited the functions of the organs, pushing blood and ventilating the lungs when the brain no longer could. Machines that came so close to heart soothing. She wondered if she'd seen any of those in the hall outside. Now she was the slightest bit grateful for Trin's company, because doing this alone could easily consume a week. They'd collected enough papers to sprawl across the low table before she started reading. Many of the papers were unusable, too specific about a certain macromolecule, or she'd misread the title, and it was irrelevant to Hendon. For the first time in a while, she labored through viscous jargon, brain befuddled by the new, made-up terminology. Neurosignalers, myelin sheaths, electroencephalography? By virtue of her grandmother's teachings and those stolen medical textbooks, some of the new words came intuitively to her. But others, mother, it was as if they'd been invented to confuse on purpose. Nika struggled to conflate the words on the page with the things she felt while soothing. Large anatomical structures were easy enough. There was some kinesthetic feedback to them. But these papers were talking about minute, unseeable things, twisted little proteins and structures on the scale of microns, things her influence skimmed over, or maybe controlled without her conscious doing. The papers focused on a particular frontier of recent research, neurosignalers, tiny little chemicals with confusing names that Nika wasn't sure what to do with. But presumably, the right balance of the right chemicals at the right times controlled consciousness, controlled the movements of muscles and the beat of the heart. As she read, her frustration only mounted, because these chemicals meant nothing to her, but it was all these wordy scientists seemed to care about. She just wanted to heal a thalamus, whatever that was, mother damn it all.
"Anything of use?" Trin asked when they dwindled their accumulated resources down to a couple of papers.
Nika shook her head, too tired for words. That's all these papers were. Just words. And if she wanted to heal Hendon the way heart soothes did, the way her grandmother did, she was all but sure the answer wouldn't come from these books. Dr. Santo was right. Maybe the answer hadn't been discovered or invented yet. And maybe it never would be, because the heart sleuths who could teach her had been lost to the machinations of time. For a moment, Nika grappled with the thought of failure and having to tell Mimi to plan another funeral because she couldn't wake Hendon, of returning to her unchanged apartment as though she'd never even taken the time away, to eating alone again and sleeping on that noisy mattress. Nika closed the book before her, its words and images swimming in her vision even after she pushed it back at Trin. Was this it then? Was she giving up? The act of resignation came with all the resistance of taut muscle. It was admitting that heart-soothing hadn't been enough, yet again. Something squeezed in her chest, right where her heart was. No, she would try once more. With all she'd learned, with all she had left to try, she would give Hendon one more chance. Her heart-soothing had to be enough. Just then, the door to the library opened. Trin hurried to clear space on the table for a physician, but it was only Cochin who rounded the shelves. He looked a little unkempt, his collar unbuttoned and hair windswept. A bag hung from his shoulder, and he smiled, though his gaze grew wary when he turned the shelf to see Trin sitting there beside her. Nika narrowed her eyes. "You booked us over Dr. Santo's lunch," she grumbled, though there was a great deal more she would have said if Trin hadn't been there. "Did I? Ah, no wonder he had no appointments at that hour." Cochin feigned innocence with an ingratiating grin. "Seems like you had no trouble." She shifted her jaw. "Anyway," he continued, "I heeded your request for literature." Cochin shrugged off the bag, unbuckled it on the table, and slid it over to her. Nika eyed it warily, trying to discern whether he was being genuine or deceptive. A nod encouraged her to accept it, and when she opened the bag, she found three books within. Their titles revealed they were introductory books in biology, not even anatomy, the kind meant to teach children. He smiled scathingly. "I figured you might need to start with the basics." His insults had never broken skin before, but this, atop her growing defeat, the futility of her heart-soothing, pricked something fragile. Tears welled in her eyes, and she bit them back as her fingers curled around the bag. "Thank you," she said through gritted teeth, glaring up at him. Nika turned, not wanting to give him the satisfaction of having wounded her. Before he could get another word in, she pushed past him toward the door. As they left the medical center, Trin sidled up to her.
"What did he give you?"
"Nothing."
"Are you okay?"
He gave her a wary look, like he was afraid of prodding a tiger. "Fine." Trin swallowed.
"Do you want to talk about it?"
"No." Respecting her request for silence, Trin ceased conversation for the rest of their journey back to the Kongmi Manor. Nika tossed the books in her trash can as soon as she reached her room. 12. Nika woke the next morning to a commotion outside her window, a rattling from the gardens. Groggily, she smoothed her unkempt hair back and went to investigate, finding a truck parked up the path, full of guests. She squinted, blinking the sleepiness from her eyes. Those weren't guests. They were automatons, rows of them, propped in sitting positions in the back of the truck. The doors opened, and where Nika expected workers to disembark from the truck, it was Cochin who slid out of the driver's seat. Nika frowned, eyes narrowing. After their meeting at the medical center, she could have gone a lifetime without seeing him again. She watched him round the vehicle and enter the solarium, wondering if he knew she was still here with the Kongmis. As if to answer her question, Cochin's gaze swept across the upper stories of the manor, and Nika retreated from the windows, wondering if he'd seen her. The creak of hardwood from outside her room drew her attention away from the garden. Slipping into an easy outfit, Nika exited the room to find Hendon's door wide open. She crept across the hallway and, as with the first time she met him, found Dr. Santo sitting beside Hendon's bed. This time, He was alone, placing a stethoscope beneath the unbuttoned collar of Hendon's shirt. Dr. Santo gave her an inviting smile when he noticed her.
"Morning, Miss Swan."
"Dr. Santo," she greeted, feeling at ease when there was no Trin around to dissect her every word. Now comfortable within the space of Hendon's room, she pulled up a chair across from him and observed Dr. Santo as he worked.
"I'm glad to see you're still in town," he said,
moving the drum of the stethoscope around Hendon's chest.
"Did you find what you needed in my library?"
"Yes," she lied, her mood souring at thoughts of Cochin's books. "You have a very informative collection."
"What did you say your medical background was again?"
"I studied briefly at Jalon," she said, omitting the part of her false backstory where she dropped out. It shouldn't have mattered, but she didn't want Dr. Santo thinking any less of her. "You're not in the office today?"
"Home visits," Dr. Santo clarified. "Gives me an excuse to stop by. The siblings like to think they're all grown now, but they're never too old for their Uncle Sean."
"Do they pay you?" Nika cocked a brow, wondering whose time they considered more valuable, his or hers. She had a feeling as to the answer. He waved a hand.
"They've tried, but I couldn't charge them for this. Not when I can't actually do anything for Hendon. Besides, those closest to Gwen always did serve him for love, not money."
Nika watched him, waiting for him to realize the contradiction there, that not everyone had been loyal to him. Not at the end, anyway. When he didn't, she said,
"You know about the sibling suspicions, don't you?"
He regarded her with new interest.
"About their father?"
Nika nodded. "Do you believe them?" After a pause, he drew away from Hendon and removed his stethoscope bud from his ear. His words were slow, but thoughtful when they came.
"I'm a man of science. I try to wait for evidence before I make any conclusion, and I have to say there hasn't been much evidence," he said, echoing some of her thoughts. "But I believe in the strength of the siblings' conviction. If I could heal Hendon for them, give them their peace of mind either way, then it's what I'll do."
Nika watched Dr. Santo thoughtfully as he returned to his examination, taking a pulse, measuring the blood pressure, pinching Hendon's fingernail beds to check for blood flow. Though she'd learned many of medicine's basic procedures from stolen textbooks, she'd never considered the ways they matched and strayed from heart soothing. It was all the same healing, just with a different set of tools. In the moment, he reminded Nika so much of her own grandmother, healing with the same balance of meticulousness and empathy. An ache bloomed in her chest, followed by jealousy, because the siblings had something that she'd lost, and they didn't even know it. "You must love them."
"Mimi and Andao, like my own children. And Trin, I've known him since the night he tried robbing the place."
"Trin did what?" Dr. Santo laughed heartily at her surprise.
"You didn't know? Gwan all but adopted Trin from the streets. The boy attempted robbery, and Gwan financed his education. But I suppose it would be hard not to, considering how Trin and Andao had grown on each other."
Trin? Robbing the house? She couldn't imagine him stealing a thing, not even a kiss. But if that were true, and Mr. Kongmi had found Trin from off the streets just as the siblings had found her, then maybe it wasn't such a stretch to imagine herself here too. Her honest, true self. "Dr. Santo," she began, feeling a touch of hesitance where she never had before, because he'd offered her roots here. But he didn't know who she truly was. Still, he turned his full attention to her, again taking the stethoscope bud out of his ear. "Did you really mean what you said? That someone like me could belong in your lab?"
"Why not?"
he answered easily, and she reminded herself that her background was falsified. He elaborated,
"Of course, we could start you in a learning position until you get comfortable. Then we can explore the limits of what medicine can truly do."
The limits of medicine. Nika wondered if Dr. Santo would consider heart soothing within that caliber. "It's all in memory of your son, isn't it?" He nodded, hanging the stethoscope around his neck and turning toward her, expression somber.
"Yes.
His name is... was... Layton. I'm working toward the day where conditions like his aren't the end.
And you're not just asking me as a formality? Nika realized her insecurity was showing and pulled it back with a dismissive laugh.
Definitely not, Dr. Santo assured her, maybe a little too quickly. I handpick all my employees.
Did you handpick your aide? Some of her snideness slipped through as she forgot her audience, but Dr. Santo only chuckled.
Yes, I did. He already stood out as the youngest in his class, but I'd never met anyone with so much ambition. Took one look at him and thought, there's a boy who would do anything to achieve his goals, and knew I had to get him on my staff.
As if the mere mention of his name summoned him, Cochin materialized at the door and cleared his throat. Nika straightened promptly, wondering if he'd listened in.
Dr. Santo? Miss Swan? He greeted. All automatons are accounted for and undamaged from the commute. Actually, Miss Swan, Mr. Depp and I could use an extra pair of hands unloading them, if you wouldn't mind.
His eyebrows lifted in question, and she gave him a steely glare. Her jaw gritted against further insults. She had ripe things to say about his audacity, his scorn, and his gift, but not in front of Dr. Santo.
Very well, she ground out, only because etiquette would expect her to agree.
She stood, stiffly, and bowed a farewell to Dr. Santo.
Until next time, Doctor.
Annoyance simmering just beneath her skin, she followed Cochin out of the room. She didn't speak to him. He didn't deserve her words, not even her insults, despite how she longed to spew them.
Not going to talk to me?
He asked, frustratingly observant.
I don't see what there is to talk about.
His introductory textbooks were meant to solicit a reaction, so her anger would be his victory. He watched her out of the corner of his eye, as though cautious to the full extent of her coldness.
And here I thought we were getting along.
You have slighted me at every opportunity, failed to book my appointment with Dr. Santo, and given me beginner textbooks when I asked for literature, she reminded him. They descended toward the garden entrance, strides matched. But sure, we're getting along. An infuriating smile teased at his lips, as though the list of his offenses invoked fond memories.
There, now you're talking to me.
Annoyance prickled at her throat, that he'd outplayed her again when she wanted to be removed from his game entirely. They'd entered the solarium by now, and she turned to fully face him. Nika balled her fist, yearning to hurt him. Not a skin-on-skin act of heart-soothing, but more a knuckles-against-cheek act of human rage.
You want to talk? Let's talk. I don't understand you. When I first ran into you, I almost thought you were trying to help me.
You never thanked me for that, by the way.
You've been hostile ever since.
You've been equally so.
What's your play, Van Cochin? Are you trying to edge me out because I ruined your papers? Are you really so vindictive?
It's as I told you at the wake. You don't belong here.
She narrowed her eyes. That's a lie. I know Dr. Santo has people like me in his employment. So what is it then? You feel threatened for some reason that I might...
Nika, he interrupted, his tone shaped with imperative.
Have you considered that I'm only trying to help you?
Cochin caught his words, dragged them back, clenched his jaw. The stone in his throat bobbed as his contempt returned, but Nika had caught the crack in his mask. Behind it, she saw something vulnerable and honest. Desperation.
Help me, she asked.
Help me what?
Before he could respond, the door to the solarium clicked open, and Trin stepped inside, clipboard in hand. At the sight of her, his expression settled into its usual wariness, as though waiting for her to do something brazen. Nika wanted more time to demand answers from Cochin, but he continued his business with Trin as though she weren't in the room.
Mr. Depp, is everything in order?
Trin straightened the clipboard.
Seems so. Only 4 of 12 automatons ever used. No damages.
Cochin nodded, looking satisfied.
Great. I hope you don't mind, but I wrangled Miss Swan to help us.
Trin flashed her a punitive grin.
No, I don't mind one bit.
he said before exiting the solarium. Nika followed begrudgingly, sending a glare to the back of Trin's neck as he led the way toward the garden, where a truck bed full of human-sized automatons awaited them. They were smaller up close, each only about her height, and the metal carapace thin. They'd been strapped down in gangly positions, jointed limbs askew and heads lolling. In parts, the metal had been padded with rubber, and their mouths were agape in wide O's, lending them the eerie look of ghosts. Trin unstrapped one, hefted it down from the truck, and deposited it into her arms. Nika staggered underneath the weight, shifting the metal carcass in her grip until it flopped like a hollow bride in her arms. Though it was unwieldy, the automaton was lighter than it should have been for metal and rubber, a testament to Mr. Kongmi's craft. By the time she'd adjusted her grip, Trin had already hoisted another automaton over his shoulder and smirked at her struggle as he turned toward the garage. "Need a hand?" Cochin asked, loading an automaton onto his own shoulder. She wasn't sure if it was a taunt or a genuine offer. "I'll manage," she muttered as they continued after Trin. She gave Cochin a sidelong glance, suddenly aware of how he tread in step with her. The urge to continue their earlier conversation pricked at her patience, but she hadn't missed how Trin stayed only a few steps ahead, deliberately within earshot. "What are these automatons for?" she asked instead, her tone docile. "Medical training dummies, a collaboration between Dr. Santo and the late Mr. Kongmi," Cochin responded. He was playing nice in Trin's audience, just as much as she was. "They've got tracheas and esophagi and pharynxes for intubating, and their chests are meant for practicing resuscitation. Just something for the students to beat and bruise, rather than live patients or cadavers." Though Nika could appreciate the genius in that, there was no replacement for a live patient in heart soothing. The metal and rubber of a mannequin, no matter who the artisan, would never be able to mimic an anatomical system in action, the way blood pulsed with life, the muscles with electricity, the lungs with volume. If any of them could soothe, they would understand how nonsensical a goal this project was, trying to make an automaton anything more than metal and cogwork. But, for the sake of Swan Ko Nika, she said, "Their ingenuity never ceases to amaze me." When they reached the outbuilding, Cochin withdrew a keyring from his pocket, which held a lone key. Wrestling the automaton across one shoulder, he fumbled with the lock until it clicked open, and all three of them hoisted up the weight of the outbuilding door. It opened to reveal the late Kongmi's auto carriages, as well as the hearse yet to be returned. The corner of the outbuilding near the workbench had been cleared, and Trin laid down the automatons across the floor. Nika and Cochin followed suit, lining up automatons on a dirtied white tarp like bodies from an epidemic. The light of the sun caught the key in Cochin's hand as he palmed it to Trin. "Here, I won't be needing this anymore, so I figured I'll return it now before I forget." Trin made a noise of agreement, pocketing the key. Even after it had disappeared from her view, the key retained Nika's attention, and her brow creased with focus as she fielded a haphazard thought. Hadn't Andow mentioned something about tampered auto carriages the day of Mr. Kongmi's death? What was Cochin doing with a key to the outbuilding? Before the thought could blossom into something dangerous, Trin gestured them toward the garden to ferry more automatons. Cochin followed. "Wait," she said, pausing Cochin mid-step. She waited a beat for Trin to continue out of earshot before saying, "What did you mean by what you said earlier? Help me what?" Cochin turned, his expression unreadable. "I'm not sure what you mean." "Cochin." His gaze flicked far down the path, where Trin disappeared around the corner. Something warred behind his eyes, the muscle in his jaw twitching in the long pause. At last, he said, "Help you make the right decision." "About what?" "Something gilded is only gold on the surface." She cocked a weary brow. "I'm not a poet, Cochin." The look he gave her was a poignant one, and he thinned his lips, as though debating his next words. At last, he chose, "I know you're not from this part of Thumis." Nika readied an excuse. Well, I...
You wanted honesty. The least you can do is not lie to me.
His eyes held candor, gaze so sharp that she knew he'd long since dissected the shell of her false identity.
If you're smart, you'll heed my advice. Run back to wherever I found you in the Horseboro. Spend too much time in this part of the city, with these people, and you'll only get hurt.
Were his last words a threat or a warning? She wasn't sure how to parse out his honesty. She'd all but asked for it, but now she preferred the condescension, because at least that was something she was accustomed to. Without any more elaboration, Cochin continued back to the truck. Nika let him fall out of step with her, lagging behind as he walked just so that she could observe him. The self-assurance in his stride, the sharp line of his jaw, the exposed lengths of skin where Nika's fingers could reach if the need arose. With so many secrets in the air, she had to wonder who Ven Cochin, with all his cryptic words, truly was. Just a physician's aide? Or something more? Something sinister? They didn't speak much further as they carted the rest of the automatons to the garage. When they did, it was just niceties for show, Cochin holding the door for her or helping her handle the dummies. In a coincidence of timing, Dr. Santo emerged from the garden entrance just as they finished up, carrying a briefcase of his instruments. He gave Nika a considerate nod before dipping into the passenger side of the auto carriage. Cochin circled the bed of the truck, coiling up wires and buckling straps. Before he embarked, he paused to address her.
Miss Swan, he began, his expression cryptic.
You didn't actually read the books, did you?
I found them beneath me, she responded.
Something shifted in his eyes.
It's better that way, he said, and hopped into the driver's seat without another word.
In the next moment, the engine was on, and the truck was pulling down the road.
What did he mean by that?
Trin asked, crossing his arms and giving her a sidelong glance. Your guess is as good as mine. Her brow knit, mind returning to the day before. She hadn't even opened the books before she'd thrown them in the trash.
You seem to be getting close with Mr. Ven, Trin said.
One could misread it as closeness, sure, she returned, her thoughts elsewhere. Already, her feet were taking her past Trin and back into the manor, up the stairs, into her room. She dropped to her knees before the trash can and fished out the limp bag of books. Nika poured them out onto her bed, three in total, wondering if she'd misread their titles. But no, they were still the same introductory books, teaching biology at a grade schooler's level. Until she thumbed the dust jacket of one of the books. It came off easily, too loose. Beneath it was a leather cover softened with age and splitting in corners, a ratty thing that belonged in no library. The other three were the same. She was almost afraid to open them, fearing they would crumble beneath her touch. But she did, and her heart stuttered as she saw the text, the language, the diagrams. Passages written in character, bodies drawn along lines of influence, pictures colored by synesthetic sensation. They were heart-soothe books.
13. He knew. Ven Cochin knew. What else could the heart-soothe books mean? She only had to wonder how he knew. Was it a lucky guess, compiled from all the circumstantial evidence? Their run-in at the Horseboro, her Yarangi's roots, her interest in medicine? Or was it something more ominous? Nika thought of all the ones who knew she was a heart-soothe, how the information could get out. Andao, Mimi, and Trin knew, but they wouldn't have let it slip. The only others were those who'd attempted to buy her on the butcher's row. Like the man in the fox mask. A man who knew what she was, who'd used that word, heart-soothe, with an incongruous familiarity. Had he learned that word from books like these? She'd assumed the butcher's row hadn't followed her here. But perhaps she'd been wrong. She'd run into Cochin during her escape from the butcher's. He must have learned then what she was. He must have realized she would end up in the butcher's row.
He must have donned the black hood and fox mask the very next day, prepared to buy her. The question still lingered. Why? It didn't matter. He'd made his warning quite clear. Nika should have left then, taken the books and fled the Kongmi Manor. But she'd made a promise to give Hendon one more chance. After that, she'd take the money and run far, far from this entire mess. Just leave it all now. But she'd promised. Promised whom? Hendon, of course. Hendon's in a coma. He'd never know. Try again. The Kongmis? That was for a price. But if you can part with the Chem, you can leave it all behind. Herself, then. Nika had made a promise to herself. As the quaver of her heart trembled near stillness, as the pounding in her ears quieted to a whisper, Nika realized that her motives were selfish. They always had been. She was doing this for herself, because she had something to prove. Because she needed to know if she could. Because the role of a heart soothe was to heal. And if she had not been able to heal her mother, then damn it, she would heal Hendon. Gathering the books close, Nika drew out of her room and slipped into Hendon's, finding him alone in his bed by the window. There, as she had many times before, she settled beside him and curled her fingers around his hand. Nika soothed. Her hearing was muffled as she reimmersed herself, as though she dipped her head beneath the surface of water. The bloat returned, his body as lethargic as a fly caught in molasses. Nika pushed her way back up to the thalamus, trying to imagine those tiny little chemicals from Dr. Santo's literary journals. She swept her influence through the cerebrospinal fluid, but it was a net meant to catch fish, not prawns, and though she could push and pull at the fluid, salt or embitter it with latent instinct, she could not grasp at those neurosignalers that the modern journals had praised. She could rake her influence through the blood, the thalamus, through every last inch of his cranium, and still never see the microscopic processes that Thuman doctors exalted. Because that wasn't what heart soothing was meant to do. Frustrated, she snapped her hand away, feeling the rise of annoyance, and a little bit of panic, incurred by the fear of having to leave the Kongmi Manor with nothing to show for it. Deflating, Nika watched the entrance, waiting for her grandmother to emerge from the door and give her an answer. She'd never learned how to heal something so foreign before, not without another heart soothe to guide her. But her grandmother wasn't here, and neither were her ancestors, and the ring that hung around her neck was just a cold band of onyx and bone. Hesitantly, her eyes flicked to the books, stacked beside the bed. They entranced her as whale songs did, lyrical and dangerous, a call to the deep unknown. From Cochin, they served as a threat. But what if he wasn't the masked man? What if these books hadn't come as a warning, but as a peace offering? Nika drew the first book off the stack and let it fall open. Hand-drawn images, colored in by pastels, reimagined anatomy using the paths of influence, the networks that a heart soothe took to navigate the body. Many of the sentences were in Thuman, but the images were all labeled in Yarangi's characters she didn't recognize. She longed to understand those most of all, to learn the true name of the brain, the liver, the lungs, to know that word, heart soothe, as it sounded on the Yarangi's tongue. Once Nika started reading, she couldn't stop. As she continued, it felt as though the words had been written to her, a love letter to whatever heart soothes remained in this city, an author fervently journaling the last of their art. Did this author know their words would reach her, perhaps the last person who could understand them? And it was as if they understood her in return. The books taught in the School of the Sixfold, the traditional style of heart-soothing that her grandmother had practiced. That was back when heart-soothing had structure and tutelage, before Daltony, while her grandmother had always insisted on the Sixfold and its six rites. Those were a privilege Nika hadn't had on the streets. So, she'd always skipped the traditional steps, the permission, and intimacy. She just carved, and carved, and carved. Inexplicably, Nika found herself crying. She set the book away as the tears came, afraid they'd run the ink. It had been so long since she'd cried that she thought her tears spent, withered on the day of her mother's death. But here they came again, unbidden, but not unwelcome. And she wasn't sure if they came from happiness, or longing, or sadness, or from the overwhelming sensation of being seen for the first time in years. It all came from this author chronicling the technicalities of their art, a heart soothe from a life before hers, who may never have foreseen the descent of their shared culture. Did they know what their words meant to her? Did they know how she pored over every misspelled word, every aberrant stroke? Some of it was in a language she couldn't fully read, the language passed only between her mother and grandmother. But as she patched together recognizable characters and radicals, a clumsy mimic of the language returned to her, and Nika felt closer to her family than she ever had before. Just earlier, she'd prayed that her grandmother would arrive with answers. Well, here she was now, a hand pressed over Nika's shoulder, a breath near her ear, a finger tracing the words over her shoulder as Nika read.
"It's okay, Gun," she whispered. "I know you couldn't practice heart-soothing the way I did, the way our family did. I know that this city gave you no choice. It's not your fault."
Lip trembling, Nika glanced up to meet her grandmother's eyes. "Have I lost touch with our family legacy, Grandma?" Her grandmother's eyes were kind, warm the way embers were.
"Never, Nika. Legacy is not about us. It's about the things we leave behind. I passed heart-soothing on to you. One day, you will pass it on to another. It doesn't matter if it's not the same kind that I practiced or that my mother practiced. Heart-soothing is ever-changing. To remember it at all, that would be enough."
Then, it wasn't just her grandmother filling the room, but her mother, her father, the faceless matriarchs before them, each sliver of bone in her ring coming alive at the bedside before her.
"See, Nika," her mother said, expression aglow, body untouched by disease. "We never left you."
"How do I heal him?" Nika asked to all of them, and none of them.
"Nika, my love, it's like I always said."
Her grandmother smiled, fingers grazing Nika's cheek with a lifelike warmth.
"Heart-soothing was never meant to be learned out of a book."
That's where she'd been wrong all this time. Healing, the way her grandmother had learned it, the way the heart-soothes before had taught it, was an intimate act of connection, the bridge from one to another. All that science was only secondary. As soon as she'd had that epiphany, the rest of the answers fell into place like tumblers aligning in a picked lock. Within seconds, she was on her feet, racing toward the door. She faltered as she neared it, taking one last look at her family. Not memories, but spirits. Somehow, Nika knew that this was not the end, that she would see them again soon. For now, her task at hand weighed on her, and she had to leave them. With that knowledge heavy against her heart, she went to Andau's study. Behind the door, she heard the muffled conversation of both the siblings and Trin, their tone grave despite the dim hour.
"It was Mr. Ngoot who talked with him on the phone that night," came Mimi's voice. "I'm sure of it. They were arguing about the engine patent."
"Killing father doesn't retract the patent." Andau's voice was tired. Trin cleared his throat.
"But it could prevent it from being renewed."
"What about Mr. Nem?" Mimi suggested.
Again, Andau offered skepticism.
"Why murder a man you've always been so vocal about contending?"
If there was one thing Nika looked forward to, it was putting their conspiracies to rest. She stepped into the study, the creak of the floorboard heralding her arrival. Even before she pushed open the doors, all three of them were already looking her way.
"I'm ready,"
she announced with all the gravitas such a statement deserved. "I'm going to heal Hendon tonight." where the ghosts of her family had stood just before. Now sat the siblings and Trin around the bedside. Hendon lay between them all, unresponsive, and neither of the Kongmis nor Trin looked particularly hopeful. But they didn't understand what the Heartsoothe books had given her. "I've had a breakthrough," she said, reluctant to admit the true nature of her revelation. "The Heartsoothe's before me. They didn't learn from textbooks or publications. They learned off other people." They returned blank stares until Mimi spoke up.
"So, what does that mean?"
"It means," this was the part that Nika was begrudging, "it means that if you want me to heal him, I need access to a healthy template."
"As in?"
Mimi's expression was imploring.
"As in, one of us?" Trin said.
Nika set her brow. "Yes, one of you." She waited, but no one volunteered. They only stared, muted, as if she weren't the same person they'd shared their roof with for weeks. As if she asked them to lay themselves bare on an operating table, awaiting her knife. Annoyance rose in her throat, and she opened her mouth to say as much, but Mimi interrupted her.
"I'll do it,"
she offered, lifting her chin as though paying tribute.
"No,"
Andau interjected. "I'm the eldest. I'll do it."
"I was the one who brought her here from the Butcher's Row," Mimi countered. "It should be me."
Nika watched them throw themselves before the knife, at once amused and irked that they treated it like some valiant sacrifice, as if they expected their anatomies to be irrevocably altered by her touch. But, through the siblings' bickering, Trin met her eye and drew off his gloves. She raised a tentative brow. He extended his hand.
"If you're looking for a template, I resemble Hendon most, physically. That should help, right?"
Nika wasn't sure, but she didn't argue with his logic. As Mimi and Andau watched, eyes bugged, Nika reached out and slipped her hand into Trin's. The instinctive twitch of his fingers did not go unnoticed, but his expression remained stalwart.
"I'm not going to hurt you, you know," she said.
It took him a moment to respond, but when he did, his tone was reassured.
"I know."
Trin took a breath, his shoulders falling and fingers slacking on the exhale, and she recognized the look in his eyes. Trust. Only once he nodded permissively did she begin to soothe. Nika pictured the drawings in the books, overlaying them with what she felt in Hendon's mind. She didn't imagine the thalamus as that nebulous region like the anatomists had drawn it. Instead, it was a bridge that her own influence crossed, the wind it caught into a lightning storm. She saw it not as a physical space, but as a current at her ankles, compelling her forward into the cortex. And when she did, it opened to her in color, a relay station of signals like a skein unspooled, with her standing at the center of it, drawn in every direction, but allowed to linger. For Hendon, some threads had been snipped with reckless disregard, while others were pulled too taut. Signals flared to silence at the end of their journeys, while few circled backward in futile loops. Inlaid in her synesthesia came the anatomy, and now it made itself apparent to her, too. Truncated nerves, swollen vessels, bloated tissue. She hadn't had a moment so beautiful, so colorful, since she'd first started soothing. Just when she thought she'd learned all there was to know about the body, another system introduced itself to her, filled in first with color, and then with blood, tissue, lymph. Now she was beginning to understand why her grandmother had been so adamant that it was an art, unlike the sciences that Thumans touted around as scripture. Hendon's thalamus was a meticulous knot come undone and tangled, and now that she saw it so tangibly before her, Nika knew she could fix it. With an exhale to refocus, Nika diffused her influence through both Hendon and Trin, at once split and conjoined. Trin's brain was alight with electricity. She felt it uptick as she nestled herself into his thalamus, but he didn't move. Hendon's, in comparison, was a ghost town, the impulses few and languid when they came, tangling themselves in the snarled structure of his broken anatomy. The contrast in their bodies was apparent. She'd never soothed two people at once before. Nika had barely ever soothed anyone awake, other than her family. Who would let her? Now she saw why the Heartsoos of the past had chosen this method of learning, why words and drawings could never compare. Trin's body was a blueprint unfurled, and she saw the gaps in Hendon's anatomy plainly when she compared the two. Tissue here, an axon there, blood filled in elsewhere. She perceived the damage from the accident more clearly than she ever had before, felt it throb beneath her influence. Nika drew stores from her liver. Her sugar burned, entering her veins and migrating to her fingers where they rested on Hendon's hand. Heat bloomed at the sight of transfer, the energy crossing between their bodies as surely as her influence did. She snaked that energy up to the brain, following the spinal arteries, until it flooded Hendon's brainstem. Then she got to work fixing it, regrowing tissue and mending axons, extending vessels and generating synapses. Trin had relaxed completely under her influence, and soon their structures looked mirrored and almost identical. The only difference was her touch. She'd rebuilt along the skeleton of Hendon's torn structures, stitching together what was already there and grafting on what wasn't. All the while, she fed him a continuous stream of her own sugar until her liver petered toward empty and her stomach flipped, a visceral reminder of her growing hunger. Her patchwork wasn't perfect. Maybe this was an injury nothing could truly heal, not even heart-soothing. But when she was done, her energy spent, she felt that blockage clear from Hendon's brain, the threads rewired, and the center alive. Slow, at first, but she stimulated them with an exhale of electricity. Once she'd started it, his brain no longer needed her help, the electrical storm buzzing back to life before she even pulled her hand away. Nika peeled back, arms shaking from the fatigue. That had been too much, taking more than anyone she'd healed before. The tissue growth hadn't been voluminous, but it had been a meticulous and energy-heavy process, and her influence had been split between two bodies. Now she sagged back in her chair, letting out a deflated breath as the world returned to her. Lights, the crinkled silk of her outfit, the quiet snore of Hendon before her. He was sleeping. This time, it was truly sleep. Andau was tending to Trin, who blinked wearily as though waking from slumber. Nika watched him carefully, anxiety rising with her nausea, that she had unknowingly hurt him, that it hadn't been enough to save Hendon, that something had gone wrong in her experimentation. Then Hendon shifted, the first movement he'd made on his own since she'd been here, and Nika released a long breath.
"Is he?" Mimi's voice grew wary with optimism.
"Yes," Nika said. None but those in the room would know what had transpired tonight. No one could ever learn. But Nika felt like the world had stopped to watch her. Not Theumas, no. But her world. Her family above. "See, Ma?" she wanted to say. "I healed him. After long last, I healed him." Now Nika could truly claim that title she'd used for herself. Heartsooth. And if she were to die tomorrow, a slice of her bone might even belong on her onyx ring, accompanying the Heartsooths of the past. Curtailing her triumph came a wave of nausea, washing over her gut. It deepened as she tried to stand unsuccessfully.
"I'm hungry," she said, the simplest way to say that her stores felt bone dry, her liver puckered, her blood thirsting for sugar.
Andau jumped to his feet. "Of course," he said, then hesitated a moment, as though remembering he didn't know how to prepare a meal without servants. "Rice crackers, and tea. I'll be back." Trin and Mimi stayed rooted, both eyeing Hendon.
"What did you do?" Trin asked.
"That thalamus we researched. I patched it back. His own brain was struggling to communicate with itself after it was injured in the accident," she said. "As for you, I removed your happiness centers. So, I changed nothing, really."
He blinked a moment before it registered to him as a joke. And Trin laughed. He laughed. Just a quiet rumble behind closed lips, but a laugh nonetheless. Even Mimi stared at him in surprise, her smile cautious but genuine. She took Hendon's hand in her small, long fingers and held it up to her lips in a kiss that belied a smile. From that kiss, from Trin's laugh, radiated hope, warmth renewed in this cold bedroom. Then came the familiar feeling that Nika didn't belong here, enveloped by their growing happiness. She'd done her job. She'd get her pay in the morning when Hendon woke. Maybe she'd even milk a parting meal from the Kongmis. But she'd healed Hendon, and anything more would be overstaying her welcome. Her success tonight came tinged with disappointment, and when Andow returned with her crackers and tea, she took them, standing too quickly. Nausea roiled across her again, her stomach churning on empty and black swarming her eyes. She'd done it again, spending too much and forgetting herself in her soothing. Her vision vignetted, the plate slipping from her hand as her feet fell from underneath her. "Somebody catch me," she said, just before she fainted. 14. Nika dreamed of dying. Not the way her family had, nor the way she'd imagined it for herself, but peacefully, happily, willingly. Stepping into death as one stepped into an embrace, because there would be her mother on the other side, not yet emaciated by fever, and her father, 2 feet on firm ground and unclaimed by salt water. Her grandmother would be there too, more than ash, arms wide open. Nika stepped forward, but she moved nowhere. Something yanked her back, as firmly as a cord around her waist, but she dragged her feet forward, an arm outstretched.
"Not yet," her grandmother said. "You've life yet to live."
She held the expression Nika remembered most from her, stern but doting, at once a display of love and caution. Then Nika flew backward into sudden wakefulness, heart drumming against her ribs and lights blearing her vision. Languidly, her surroundings came to her, the tucked covers she'd just pulled out, a clunky medical device assembled on one side of her bed, and a hazy figure pulled up on the other. Nika blinked away her fogginess, and the figure's features sharpened to form Dr. Santo, sleeping in a chair beside her bed with his arms crossed, collar unbuttoned, and spectacles sliding down his nose.
"Dr. Santo,"
she said, her voice haggard. She cleared her throat and tried again.
"Dr. Santo."
He startled awake, fumbling to push up his glasses, and blinked at her in surprise, looking almost as dazed as she was.
"Oh, what a relief," he sighed. "You're awake."
"Is Cochin here?"
Nika asked